ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सर्व वैष्णवे मोर नमस्कार इते अपराध किचु नहुक आमा। Today, on the occasion of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance celebration, Vyasa Puja, we'll read from Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi Kanda, chapter 17, text 153. Actually, if we photo this, we can give this also, because it's also just reading. So it's written on the board. That's written in which script? Both Roman and Telugu. Is it both? Both. Who rendered it in Telugu script? Yourself. Okay. Good. Okay, please repeat after myself. Oh, you can just photo the first page, because it's... Yukta Vairagya, one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's great contributions, the elaboration of Yukta Vairagya. So, Sarava Vaishnavar Paye Mor Namaskar Ite Aparadha Kichu Nahuk Amar Sarva Vaishnavar Paye Mor Ite aparadha kichu nahuk amar. Sarva Vaishnaver paye mor namaskar. Ite aparadha kichu nahuk amar. Sarva Vaishnaver paye mor namaskar. Ite aparadha kichu nahuk amar. Sarva Vaishnaver paye mor namaskar. Ite aparadha kichu nahuk amar. Sarva Vaishnaver. Of all the devotees, paye at the feet, more my namaskar. You all know what namaskar means. Ite in this matter, aparadha. Yeah, unfortunately, we all know what aparad means also. So, kichu, kuncham, means same thing in Telugu and Tamil. Nahuk, let there not be. Amar. So the translation given here is, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of all the Vaishnavas so that they may not consider my offenses. And I can give a somewhat different translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of all the Vaishnavas, and I hope that they will not take offense. Let there not be any offense in this matter. In other words, may they not be offended by my offering obeisances, or may there not be any offense in my attitude. Commentary. This is translated from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is called Gauriya Bhasha. So these words, Sarva Vaishnava Paye Mor Namaskar, they are the words of Vrindavan Das Thakur, the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat. He's obviously, the whole Chaitanya Bhagavat is written by him, but here he's writing in the first person. He's not writing that Nityananda Prabhu is saying this or anyone else is saying this. So, paraphrasing, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, accepting subordination to all Vaishnavas, I am humbly offering obeisances and praying at their lotus feet that they may not consider my offenses. Then, continuing the commentary, without understanding the purport of pure devotional service, the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who are so-called devotees, consider themselves devotees or Vaishnavas. But since they are either material enjoyers or pseudo-renunciants, they are situated far away from non-duplicitous devotional service. Therefore, rather than achieving the service of Vishnu, they enjoy Vishnu's illusory energy and mistakenly accept this as service to Vishnu. By using the phrase Sarva Vaishnava in this verse, Vaishnava Acharya Thakur Vrindavan did not refer to pseudo-devotees, atheists, or Prakriti Sahajiyas. He has taught everyone to accept subordination to the Vaishnavas. Aul Bal Karta Bhaja Nera Darabeshai Sahajya Shaki Beki Shmarta Jat Goshai Otibari Churar Dhari Garanga Nagari Tota Kohe Eterar Shonga Nahi Kori. One should avoid, well, actually it's Tota Kohe, one Babaji, Tota Babaji says, I do not associate with these 13 classes who are known as Aul, Baul, Karta, Bhaja, Nera, Darave, Shai, Shaki, Begi, Sharta, Jatko, Sai, Oti, Bari, Chura, Dhari, and Goranga Nagari. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur further comments, these 13 types of upper sampradayas opposed to Gaur's teachings and identified by an ancient Mahajan cannot be called pure Vaishnavas because they are purely non-Vaishnava, giving up their bad association and accepting subordination of pure Vaishnavas has been indicated in this verse. If one offensively thinks that the word Sarva Vaishnava has been used at this place out of humility to indicate all human beings, then it is to be understood that such a foolish person is overwhelmed by the illusory energy of Vishnu and qualified to receive the title of Asura, demon. All living entities are by nature Vaishnavas, but the mind's restlessness and the gross body's sinful activities, which are born from the bodily concept of life, are not included in the pure non-duplicitous principles of Vaishnavism. Acceptance of subordination to the pure Vaishnavas and encouraging Vaishnav aparad, born from the external enjoying propensity, are never the same. I'll just read from Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, the first volume, page that is 45 in the Roman numerals, took me XLV. under the nomenclature. You know how to read Roman numerals? I had to think about it a little bit myself. XLV. The X before the L means 50, the X before it means take off 10. And, oh, so it's page, yeah, 44. Is that what I said? 45, sorry, with the V means a 5. How did the Romans do multiplication? It's impossible, huh? They must have done it because they built viaducts and all kinds of things. Roads, they must have had mathematics. Well, we won't waste our time wondering about that. Did you find it? Okay. So I'm reading from what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said about Sarasvati Puja. Today we are doing Sarasvati Puja. It's not the day of Sarasvati Puja, is it? Well, it is. Tune in. He stated, on Gaura Shukla Panchami, the fifth day of the bright fortnight of Magh, the day of Sarasvati Puja, children perform worship for the sake of gaining materialistic knowledge, apara vidya, and we, members of the Gauriya Math, offer such worship through the hand of Vyas to the goddess of spiritual knowledge, Paravidya, on the fifth day of the dark fortnight of Magh, Krishna Shukla Panchami, the day of Srila, which means this day. So it's 2 weeks different, or eight paksha difference. So today is Sarasvati, worshipping Sarasvati. How is it that his name is Sarasvati, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati? How is he Sarasvati? Well, that's discussed in a section here. Even before the book begins, his names are discussed, and his very names they're not just some. Just like you have to give a child something. Your child is born, you have to give a name, or two names, or three names. So you have to give some name. But his names are not just arbitrarily given, but they are all deep with meaning. Now, getting back to this commentary from the Gauriya Bhashya of Chaitanya Bhagavat. This is a completely Vaishnava expression of humility and obeisance to all the Vaishnavas. This verse is just suitable for glorifying all the Vaishnavas. If one is to comment on this, then one could glorify all the Vaishnavas and dilate on the qualities of the Vaishnavas which makes them worshipable. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur chose instead to point out who are not Vaishnavas, who might appear to be Vaishnavas, but they're not really Vaishnavas at all. Now, among these 13 which are mentioned, 13 groups, some of them are somewhat Vaishnavas. Yeah, actually most of them are. The Smartas, they're not at all, but they're actually opposed to Vaishnavas. But there may be devotees become influenced by smarter ideas. Owl not real, no real relationship with Vaishnavism. Some kind of owl, you might say, is more like a fakir. It's mostly from Muslim background. These are different kinds of groups that were common in Bengal at that time. Baul, not really Vaishnavas, but they may. Baals are famous for singing cryptic songs. Cryptic, do you know what it means? It means, has a lot of meaning, but it's very esoteric and difficult to understand. It can be understood by only people who are initiated into the secrets of Baalism. Baalvad. So they may sing, they'll sing songs about Gauranga also, but it's not really their focus. Their focus is the Moner Manush, the man of the mind, whatever that may be. In Karta Bhaja, not really Vaishnavas. But the thing is, in Bengal, the influence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya was so strong that practically everyone, they were affected by that and influenced by that. And so even if they have different teachings, they may incorporate that. Nera means a sect of Buddhists. Nera means having a shaved head. That's all it means. So, sect of Buddhists, many of them became Vaishnavas. But then they relapsed into degraded behavior. Sai. Yeah, you all know what Sai is. Sai Ram, Sai Krishna, Sai Baba, all this. But this is the Sai Baba, he wasn't the first Sai. So it's similar to owls, and they're some kind of Muslim come Hindu renunciants. Actually, at that time, among the common people, especially in Bengal, there wasn't that much division between Muslims and Hindus as now. And probably, yeah, well even just like here in Telangana, I see on Muharram, Muslims celebrate and Hindus celebrate. And I don't know if the Muslims celebrate, but they used to do it. Like, for instance, in Kashmir, the Muslims used to take part in all the Hindu festivals and vice versa. So the renunciants who would wander around in Bengal, some of them weren't clearly Hindus or Muslims. They were somewhere in between, and no one really bothered whether they're Muslims or Hindus. But some of the, just like the Baals, they had definitely more Hindu influence, although they could be Muslim Baals also. But Owls, they're more Muslim influence. Then Sahajiya. they have a whole big philosophy, but it's not a very good one. The idea that Sahaj means easy, natural. So instead of trying to repress sexual tendencies, they indulge in them with the idea of attaining prem by doing so. Somewhat derived from tantrism, the idea in left-wing tantrism is that one has to do all the sensual activities in the most extreme and socially rejected manner. For instance, having sexual intercourse with a corpse. Any takers? Anyone interested? I don't think so. And in this way you attain self-realization. I'd rather take prasadam. Seems like a better way of Krishna prasadam. Sakhi beki are men who dress. This is Yes, Sahajiya, they're definitely. Those in the first line, Al Bal Kata Bhajanera Darabe Shai, they have some relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, not some peripheral relationship. Sahajiya, they definitely identify themselves as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Vaishnav Sahajiyas, they were also apparently Buddhist Sahajiyas prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's coming. Sakhi Beki, they definitely identify themselves as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are men who want to consider themselves as gopis by dressing as women and acting as women and talking in a falsetto voice so that they sound like a woman. And even for 4 days a month, they won't be seen. They'll be in purdah because they're women. But they're not women. Smarta, I already discussed a little bit. Jat Gosai means those who are born in the families of Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, and there are so many. These are the two prominent ones. There are others also. Gadadha, the Advaita Vamsa, Nityananda Vamsa, Gadadha Pariva, Narottam Pariva. Their idea is that by birth they are qualified to give initiation and no one else is. Atibari, this refers to those who make things too big. Too big. Jagannath Das of the Panchasakha of Puri in Orissa, he made the Oriya Bhagavatam with 13 cantos. Very popular up to the present day. So he was too big. He had too big opinion of himself. And there was other Ramchandra Kaviraj. So Churadhari, they dress as Krishna. And they dance with the Sakhi Bekis, who dress as gopis. Gauranga Nagari, they have the idea that just as Krishna is the enjoyer of the young women of Raja, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the enjoyer of the young women of Nadia. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasar Thakur says that they're all Gaura Virodhi. They're all opposed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Vrindavan Das Thakur says that I offer my obeisance to all the Vaishnavas, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasar Thakur finds in this that he is, by saying so, distinguishing the real Vaishnavas from those who pose as Vaishnavas, who are not really Vaishnavas. Now, this is a major feature of the personality of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. The essence of his personality is that he is Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata Das. He identifies himself as the servant of Krishna, who is the lover of Radharani. He didn't use the name Radharani much. He didn't say Radharani. He would say Sri Varshabhanavi in a very... which indicates his... This is all discussed in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. Which indicates his intimate yet respectful relationship with her in his gopi form as Nayan Manjari. She is Nayan Mani Manjari. Sorry, Nayan Mani Manjari. Nayan Mani, do you say this in Telugu? Do you have this saying? Yeah. In English, they also say the apple of someone's eye, or the sinusure of all eyes. So Nayamari means the jewel in the of the eye. In other words, what Radharani likes to see in her eyes is Krishna. So Nayanmani, Manjari means she is the personification of Radha's eyes or her looking. She likes to see Krishna. So in his form in the spiritual world of Vrindavan, he is in this gopi form, and here on this plane, as follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his sampradaya, one of the main features that we can understand from him is Rupa Anuga Viruddhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Hari. He is the remover of the darkness which is brought about by the wrong conclusions, those conclusions which are opposed to those conclusions accepted by the Rupa Anugas, the followers of Rupa Goswami, which is a name for the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya. They're called Rupa Anugas, followers of Rupa Goswami, not called Chaitanya Anugas. The point is that we have to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Rupa Goswami, not through others. Just like this, I mentioned that Jagannath Das of Orissa. He and his cohorts, they all claim to be associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but in the Gauriya literature, we don't find any mention of them. Their teachings were mixed with Mayavad. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was very strongly opposed to all this deviation. It's a salient feature of his personality. If we're to discuss his activities, then a major feature is that he opposed all the wrong teachings of all the people who claimed to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but were deviated from the path of Rupa Goswami, who defined pure devotion as anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakamadyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktirutama. Pure devotional service to Krishna must be free from all extraneous desires, which, although they are unlimited, they fall under two major categories. The desire for sensual amelioration, mental, for worldly pleasure, and the other major category is the desire for liberation from this world. Liberation without reference to Krishna. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stood very strongly opposed to this. Prior to him, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had also taken this up. Of course, for many years together, they practiced Krishna consciousness as, not exactly as father and son, more like guru and disciple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had started the work of delineating who's a devotee, who's not, who's only pretending. Even prior to him, these two verses, Aul Baul Karta Bhaja, these were spoken by Tota, one Babaji of Navadvip. We don't have information of him beyond that Bhaktivinoda Thakur quoted him. Prior to that, we had Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He In that verse, tadashvasaram hridayam batedam, that one's heart, if one does not cry upon chanting the holy names, then his heart is steel-framed. But Vishnu Chakra Thakur points out in the purport that there are pseudo-devotees who make a show of crying. So at the time of Vishnu Chakravarti, there were also bogus devotees. And Vrindavan Das Thakur himself in his Chaitanya Bhagavat, which was composed shortly after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had already noted that there were so many bogus people who claimed themselves to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some of them called themselves Gopal, pretending to be directly Krishna avatar, and there are various other people who were misusing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings for their own sense gratification. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur most strongly took up the fight against all these deviations. Apa sampradaya means there are sampradaya, but they're not on the right line. Apa siddhanta, every sampradaya, whether bogus or bona fide, has one of its, or practically the main distinguishing feature is its teachings and its philosophy. So the upper sampradayas, they have upper siddhantas. Wrong ideas lead to wrong action. That's why it's very important to properly understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If we understand it properly, that will be manifest as proper behavior in devotional service. If we get a misunderstanding, then we may do we will act in a manner that is not pure devotional service. But we might think that the understanding is correct and think that our behavior is correct. All these different groups, they all thought. Gauranga Nagari thought, well, we're following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the best way. That's what they think. They think that, well, there's Lakshmi Narayana in Vaikuntha, and beyond that, the very secret truths of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, that's very secret, that's not revealed to everyone. And beyond that, even more confidential, is that, hand on the mouth, even more confidential is that Krishna has come himself, Radha Bhavadyuti Suvalitam Naumi Krishna Swarupam. He has come as combining with Radha, Anta Krishna Bahir Gora. Internally he's Krishna, externally he's golden. So he comes to relish the feelings of Srimati Radharani, her feelings for Krishna. But the Gauranga Nagaris say, well, there's a stage further still, which is to understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sports with the young women of Nadia, the young wives, the young married women of Nadia. There's no record of this. It's completely contradictory to the whole mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in which he comes to relish the feelings of a devotee, not to take the position of the enjoyer. So they have the wrong idea. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stood against this, and many people stood against him and called him an offender. You see, these Vaishnavas, they've been doing this for so many years, well-established sampradayas. No one was like them. No one went against them, especially the Jat Gosais, the Goswami families who gave initiation. They were like family gurus all over India. Everyone had their family guru. And even Srila Prabhupada writes that in Vedic culture, every family has their acharya. He writes about that in the Krishna book. So they acted as family gurus to those members of Bengali society, especially, mostly in Bengal. Also in Assam, Manipur, Tripura, Orissa, to those who identified themselves and were identified by others as Vaishnavas. They would give orthodox Vaishnavas, they would give initiation. And it was the same as any family line gurus, that the guru would give initiation to one family, everyone in that family takes initiation from that guru. And when the guru dies, his sons, they initiate the next generation in the family, and it goes on generation by generation, like that. It's not necessarily a bad idea. There's nothing inherently wrong in it. If the guru is giving Krishna consciousness, and the family members are serious to follow. But it has the potential or the likelihood to degrade into simply some formality. And that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was pointing out, that the gurus are not actually, in many cases, they're not actually instructing their disciples or demanding of them the behavior required of a Vaishnava. Simply, they give initiation and they accept dakshina, and in this way, the family gurus maintain their own families. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stood against this by himself initiating, even though he was from a Shudra family. Did you know that? He's from a Shudra family. Kayasta. Among Shudras, Kayastas are really in a different class. Sometimes they're considered a different caste altogether. But they're not really, but they're very different to blacksmiths and shepherds and the other uneducated. They're highly educated. They act in the administration of governments, not as Brahmanas also do, as ministers, as advisors. But the Kayastas, they act as ministers, clerks, writing records and keeping accounts, and so many things like this. The origin of the Brahma Kayastas, in the family of which Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared, well, the origin of them is Chitragupta, who's the record keeper for Yamaraj. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although ostensibly from a Shudra family, he was obviously greater than any formal Brahmana, and he initiated and gave the sacred thread of a Brahmana to people from non-Brahmana families, which caused a big stir. In many ways, he opposed the prevailing religious status quo, although it really wasn't. It was difficult to say exactly. There was the status quo, the orthodox Vaishnavas, and then there also the Kartha Bhajas were there. They were a protest movement against the Vaishnavas. They were very widespread among the lower castes, especially. then among the more educated people, that means British educated people, many of them were gravitating to the Brahma Samaj. There was a lot of confusion. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he stood against everything which was opposed to the teachings of Rupa Goswami, which means everything in the world, and especially the conclusions that were opposed to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So many people were very upset with this, as you can imagine. Why would he attack the caste Goswamis, who were within Vaishnava society? They were well respected, they'd been established for generations. Well, Vaishnava society, although widely spread at that time in Bengal, had a very bad reputation among people who believed in morality. And morality was a big issue at that time. Due to the British influence, the British Victorian influence, if you know the word Victorian with all its baggage, with all its, what's the word? With all its subtle meanings. Victorian means very moralistic. And the British, they asserted their right to rule over India on the basis that we are civilizing the Hindus, because we are very moral and they're immoral. You see, they have this widow burning and Devi Dasis, prostitutes in the temple, and these Vaishnavas in Bengal. They say, see, Vaishnavas, they have no morality. Vaishnava was an insult among many people. That means people, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said that there's no caste. Not exactly he said there's no caste, but he said it doesn't matter in devotional service. And he also pointed toward the love between Krishna and the gopis, parakya bhav, between a man and others' wives. So people took advantage of this to say that we're following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and we're indulging in sexual activities, which would normally not be allowed in respectable society. That a man would have sexual relationships with other people's wives, or in other ways, with widows, all kinds of rejected things. So the status of Vaishnavas was very low, was considered very low, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very critical of those who misused the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to further their own materialistic ends, whether gross or subtle. So in this, one of the things that he achieved by doing so was to distinguish himself from those Vaishnavas who are not following properly. He wanted to establish that Vaishnava is the most dignified position. But to do so, he would have to differentiate himself from all other groups who were known as Vaishnavas, which is another reason that he had to separate himself. He separated himself even from the other followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some followed him, some of the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur followed him, but mostly they didn't. And he said that they had not understood Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he certainly, by founding the Gauriya Math, by taking sannyas, by preaching widely, by mixing with English people, in so many ways he distinguished himself from the traditional Vaishnavism, seeing that it was in need of great reform. He also distinguished himself from what nowadays would be called Hindutva. It was somewhat different at that time. It was Hindutva, that term came up later. But reawakened Hinduism. It was Vivekananda especially who stood up for Hindu pride, and it was mixed with anti-British sentiment that we need our own Swaraja, we should rule ourselves, kick out the British. So that was that was very prominent, especially in Bengal, more than anywhere else. As I've heard it said, that the British used to say that the South Indians are our slaves, are our servants. The West Indians, they are our friends. That would mean the Marwaris, because the British, they were doing business, they were there for money. And the Bengalis are our enemies. Especially, so many Bengalis were in this independence movement. And but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't go along with that. He, against the increasing public sentiment, he supported the British rule. His father was, after all, a prominent government service in the British Raj. And presumably the government, I don't know exactly, but the government servants, they might be more expected to support the government than to oppose it. Anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also, he praised the British rule. You don't like to hear this, maybe. Because Indians are supposed to not like the British rule. It wasn't that he was, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was intrinsically pro-British, but there's that famous anecdote that when one young man in 1922 came to the Gauriya Math at the rented building at Ultadangi Road, in North Calcutta. That time it was North Calcutta, now it's North Central. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission being propagated all over the world. And he said to this young man, whose name was Abhay Charan Day, and his companion, Narendra Malik, that you are young men, you are educated young men, you should take this mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preach it all over the world. First time he saw him. And this Abhay Charan Day, he opposed and said, because he was a follower of Gandhi and the independence movement, and he protested that our nation is a nation in bondage. Who will listen to our message? First we have to become free of British rule, then only people will listen. Who will listen to slaves? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's response was that the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, its propagation is so urgent and necessary that it cannot wait for any political adjustment. That was his verdict. So he went along. He said, the British, they're not interfering with us. Why should we interfere with them? Our business is to propagate Krishna consciousness, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually, Srila Prabhupada also said that India was better under the British. You may think, well, the British, they were slaughtering cows, but actually, Prabhupada also said that the level of cow slaughter that has been introduced after the British left, the British would not have dared to bring that in. But the Indians, they did it. They brought in so much cow slaughter, but the British, they would not have dared to do it for fear of political repercussions. After all, there are only a very small number of people ruling a vast population. And to a large extent, they relied on the cooperation of the people. Anyway, the point is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was opposed to pretty much everything that was popular and accepted at the time. But he wasn't against all these things just for the sake of being against. Some people, they make a big noise just to promote themselves. Whatever you say, they'll say something opposite. They have this attitude just to oppose. But it wasn't that he was just contrary by nature, but he wanted to establish the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And to do that, he had to point out that everything that's going on in the world presently is against the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we shouldn't think that such statements that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made, they were true then and not now. We can read about it, and it's some historical information. Of course, we don't see in our Krishna conscious movement, we don't see directly we don't see bowels. Bowels, I used to see them in the villages of Bengal. But during the communist period, they cleared out all the sadhus. They taught the children to throw stones at them and harass them. So all the sadhus, all the wandering sadhu types there, you don't see them in Bengal much now. So they have an ektara. They play this little instrument and they sing their songs. They're dressed in an unusual manner. They have long hair and they usually have their sevikar with them, some female bowel. We don't see that. Not exactly like that. Karta Bhaja is a particular group with a particular philosophy in which they worship the Guru as God. You don't see that. Daravesh, that's also kind of Muslim mendicant. Daravesh means fakir. No? You must have here also. Is it? In the Telugu speaking, all over India, pretty much, you'll find this. So we don't have Jat Gosais, caste Goswamis in ISKCON. So we may think, well, this is all out of date. Maybe it's still there in Bengal, but it doesn't relate to us in ISKCON all over the world. But the point is that they're all deviating from the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there are innumerable ways to do so. So although we may not get an outcrop of bowels and caste Goswamis in ISKCON, we may get smartas, not very likely, because smartas means those who are too much attached to rules and regulations. It's more like the other way. Prakriti Sahajiyas, those who don't like to follow rules. Actually, in my experience, the Prakriti Sahajiyas, they may follow many rules, little rules, but the main ones like no illicit sex, They don't follow. In their idea, what we would call illicit sex is a spiritual activity. Hare Krishna. So, there will be deviations. It's foolish to think that there will not be deviations, because this whole world is a deviation from Krishna's desire, and the whole of Hinduism is a deviation from the actual teachings of the Vedas. The actual teachings of the Vedas are Vaidheshcha Sarve Raham Eva Vedyaha, to follow Krishna. But there are so many different philosophies, so many different sampradayas. How is that? Because, hand on the mouth, tell him what to do. Someone tell him what to do. Go watch that. No, this, who's this with the cake hairstyle and the... You had your hand on your mouth, please go and wash it. Parampara, I learned it from Prabhupada. there are so many ways to reinterpret to avoid Krishna. Hinduism is an elaborate arrangement to avoid Krishna. And there may be some who worship Krishna, but not too much. There are pure Vaishnavas also, but pure Vaishnavas are not Hindus. Pure Vaishnavas are Sarva Padi Vinir Moktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Hrishikesha, Bhakti Ruchati. Real Vaishnavas are beyond all material designations, including that of a Hindu. They're fully dedicated to serving Krishna, the master of this. They fully engage their senses in serving the master of the senses, who is Krishna. And after the appearance of any powerful or influential philosopher or religious leader, there are always so many different opinions about how to follow. After Christ, there were so many different groups that came out, all saying that they're following Christ. And it's still going on, the fissuring or splitting of new groups with all different ideas. After Muhammad, there are two main groups which came out, the Sunni and Shia. But there were other groups also. And even within Sunni and Shia, there are so many different groups. So, after Srila Prabhupada, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, immediately, as Vrindavanadas Thakur states in Chaitanya Bhagavat, immediately there were people who were misrepresenting him. One major point that comes up in Chaitanya Bhagavat, especially, and also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, was that there was many devotees who said, yes, we fully accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the personality of Godhead, but they didn't accept Nityananda Prabhu. It was obviously a major point of contention, because Vrindavan Das speaks very strongly against them. And that comes up again in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Practically, by writing these books, which became most influential. There was a major factor in establishing, I can postulate, that a major factor in establishing that Brajendra Nandan Jai Shachishuta Hoilo Shai Balarama Hoilo Nitai. Just as this was, what I just stated was stated by Narottam Das Thakur, who came not long after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he stated also that just as Krishna has come as Gaura Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so Balaram has come as Nityananda. So this is the orthodox or proper teaching. Who is to say what's orthodox? Everyone may say we're orthodox. Practically orthodox means that which is accepted by a large group over a long period of time. Otherwise, who's to say what's right and what's not right? Not that truth is relative, but just talking in terms of how people perceive different groups. So, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were so many different opinions. There was the Kethuri Mahotsav, in which all the different Vaishnavas, not all of them, certain Vaishnavas were invited, and they had a conference, and they sorted out various theological issues, and in this way some overall unity in understanding the teachings and practice given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some overall unity was achieved. Also very important was Jiva Goswami's penning the Shatchandarbha, which gives all the Siddhantas, philosophy, teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a systematic way. So, the orthodoxy can be said that which follows Jiva Goswami. But then again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur didn't accept certain teachings of Jiva Goswami. He didn't openly reject, but Jiva Goswami established the Swakiya Vad. Radha and Krishna are married, and Vishwanath Chakravarti wrote an essay giving so many reasons why Swakiya Vad is not correct and Parakiya Vad is correct. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commenting on this. This is the work of our acharyas. See, there may be so many gurus giving initiation, but the acharyas, yesterday I was saying that Shastra Jukte Shunipun, those who are most expert in harmonizing the various statements of the Shastra and of the acharyas, they themselves are acharyas in the truest sense of the term. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that although it may, actually this comes in Chaitanya Bhagavat also, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur elaborated on it further, that although among the pure Vaishnavas there may be apparent disagreements, but there's not actually. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented that Jiva Goswami promoted this teaching of Swakiya Vad because it was required among certain of his followers who couldn't accept this. Now that may be a controversial point. I could say more about that, but I won't now. So the point here that I'm making is that we cannot, it would be foolish to think that after Srila Prabhupada there won't be deviations and disagreements, because there's never been a great religious leader or even a philosophical or political leader, an influential leader, has not been followed by different groups of people interpreting in various ways. Karl Marx, his philosophy, was tremendously influential in the 20th century, and it's still tremendously influential in ways, not directly in terms of political power, but in terms of influencing what we have. Modern feminism has its modern feminism definitely takes strength from Marxist theory, but Marx's Siddhant. Is that Siddhant or Vada? The Vada and Siddhant are not the same thing. Siddhanta, if you, gives more respect to it. It means, and it really means something which is on the basis of Shastra. Whereas Vada just means, can mean any damn idea. So that's why we say Ritvik Vada, not Ritvik Siddhanta. We don't give it that much respectability, which it doesn't deserve. Now it may be in Telugu that the word Siddhanta is used in a very broad way. But that's also one of the contributions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he wanted to define words precisely. Because without defining words precisely, we can't understand things precisely. So it is important to understand that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Marx, there are different interpretations of Marx, different enactments of Marx, Marx's theories. So it would be foolish to think that, well, anyone who says Jai Prabhupada is actually following Prabhupada in the way that he wanted us to follow, or the way that he wants us to follow. We should be alert and awake to see and understand what is actually following and what isn't. That is something we can particularly meditate on this day when we celebrate the appearance of our Acharya, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In many ways, he was paradoxical, as are great personalities. Great personalities are almost always paradoxical, really great personalities. Krishna himself, yada yada hi dharmasya, he comes to establish dharma, and he dances with others' wives. Paradoxical. He's the most merciful and vinashayata dushkritam. He kills so many demons, kills the demons. He is all powerful and he's afraid of Mother Yashoda's stick. Huh? He can give liberation. And he's tied up by Mother Yashoda. So in so many ways he's paradoxical. So great personalities, that's often seen in them, they're paradoxical. Sometimes, for instance, he's sometimes highly praised. Actually, often he highly praised his disciples. He, in one Vyasa Puja address, what he would do, in the Vyasa Puja ceremony, which was celebrated in a very grand way over several days. So all his disciples, or at least the leading ones, they would speak praises of him. And then when they'd all spoken, he would give his replying speech, pratibhashan. Have that word also? In Telugu, you say that? Pratibhashan. It's a pretty high word. In Telugu also, it's a high word. It's not much known in Bengali even. So his replying speech. So he opened one of them by addressing his disciples, my friends, protectors from dangers. So he didn't refer to them as my servants or my disciples, but you're all my friends who are protecting me from various dangers. He said, I never made any disciples. They're all my gurus. He also stated that when I read Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat and other such works, I always used to think that such devotees as are described there, they existed at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but then no longer is such association available in this world. But he said, but now I see in the Gaudiya Math there are devotees of the same level. What could be higher praise than that? He once said that my guru gave me three instructions. Not to go to Calcutta. He was speaking in Calcutta at the time. Not to go to Calcutta, not to make disciples. And what was the other one? I can't remember. I just remember these two which are relevant here. I should have done my homework. I made this book. I was allowed to compile this book. I can't say I made this book. So I can't remember everything. I didn't do my homework. So anyway, these two which are... So he said, I followed these orders. Speaking in Calcutta, he said, I never went to Calcutta. How do you accept that? He said, I only went to the Gaudiya Math, which is Vaikuntha. He said, I never made any disciples. They're all my gurus. At the same time, he warned about what could happen. And Srila Prabhupada said he left this world 10 years early when he saw the number of his neophyte disciples increasing. He was so upset with that he left this world 10 years early. So I'm going to read now this. I'll just take a little break, 5-minute break. But I'm going to read from volume 3, page 137, Putana. So, you can all stretch your legs, something like this. If you think this lecture is long, it's not. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's lectures were minimum 2 hours. And often 4, 5, or even 6 hours. So this is just a little chit-chat. But anyway, I have to take a little break. And you also can do so. So
okay, we'll continue.
Hare Krishna. So we'll continue. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he spoke against duplicity, pride, stubbornly recalcitrant behavior among his own disciples also. He never threw anyone out from the Gaudiya Math. He was very intolerant on a philosophical level. He strived to keep bad propensities out of his Gaudiya Math, but on a personal level, he was very tolerant in that sense. So I'll read from this, from a concluding portion of an article called Putana, from The Harmonist, which was the English magazine of the Gaudiya Math. So from this article, from this reading, well, you have to listen very carefully to follow it at all. From this you can understand how how very intellectually deep were the thoughts of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and at the same time how sharply, incisively penetrating they are. His use of language, actually this is one of his easier compositions. There are others which are much more difficult to understand. So I'll read from this. This is the concluding portion of an article, and it gives the idea of how organized religion is almost certain. Hand on the mouth. Caught you. Stop that habit. Go wash your hand. How it's almost certain to degenerate. There's one hope, which you'll find at the end of the essay. The hope is called Krishna. All right, anyway, I'll read it. Remember, Putana is she who came apparently as a well-wisher. But her real purpose was to kill Krishna. So, I'll read from this essay. Sri Krishna manifests his eternal birth. So there you have already something, just in, even without finishing one sentence, you have something which could, is this, an apparent, apparently contradictory statement, eternal birth, which packed in there is so much teaching and understanding and philosophy. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And our own Srila Prabhupada also, actually. Srila Prabhupada's writing is of a style which is deceptively simple. In other words, you may think, well, it's just very simple. But if you start to unpack it, and you can understand how much Siddhanta, how a deep deep elucidation and understanding of so much philosophy is packed into Srila Prabhupada's writing. So, Sri Krishna manifests his eternal birth, the pure cognitive essence of the serving soul who is located above all mundane limitations. If you want, don't bother to try to translate it, because even to understand it is difficult. If you understand it, then you can translate it. Otherwise, you can't translate it. And it's not easy to understand, even in English. His eternal birth is the pure cognitive essence of the serving soul. Okay, I'm not going to unpack it here. King Kamsa is the typical aggressive empiricist, ever on the lookout for the appearance of the truth for the purpose of suppressing him before he has time to develop. This is no exaggeration of the real connotation of the consistent empiric position. The materialist has a natural repugnance for the transcendent. He is disposed to think that faith in the incomprehensible is the parent of dogmatism and hypocrisy in the guise of religion. This is tremendous! This is tremendous. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just unmasking generations of agnostic and atheistic so-called philosophers. Continuing. He is also equally under the delusion that there is no real dividing line between the material and the spiritual. He is strengthened in his delusion by the interpretation of scriptures by persons who are like-minded with himself. This includes all the lexicographic interpreters. You have to understand his use of words, but it's too much to go into to explain it word by word. The lexicographical interpretation is upheld by Kongsa as the real scientific explanation of the scriptures and is perfectly in keeping with his dread of and aversion for the transcendental. These lexicographical interpreters are employed by Kongsa in putting down the first suspected appearance of any genuine faith in the transcendental. King Kongsa knows very well that if the faith in the transcendental is once allowed to grow, it is sure to upset all his empiric prospects. There is historical ground for such misgivings. Accordingly, if the empiric domination is to be preserved intact, it would be necessary not to lose a moment to put down the transcendental heresy the instant it threatens to make its appearance in earnest. King Kongsa, acting on this traditional fear, is never slow to take the scientific precaution of deputing empiric teachers of the scriptures, backed by the resources of dictionary and grammar and all empiric subtleties, to put down by the show of specious arguments based on hypothetical principles the true interpretation of the eternal religion revealed by the scriptures. Kongsa is strongly persuaded that faith in the transcendental can be effectively put down by empiricism if prompt and decisive measures are adopted at the very outset. He attributes the failure of atheism in the past to the neglect of the adoption of such measures before the theistic fallacy has had time to spread among the fanatical masses. You probably, just hearing this, it's difficult to understand. If you read it, you could maybe have a better idea. But this is the writings of a transcendental genius. His thought level is a prakriti, beyond the material. But Kongsa is found to count without his host. When Krishna is born, he is found to be able to upset all sinister designs against those who are apprised by himself of his advent. The apparently causeless faith displayed by persons irrespective of age, sex, and condition may confound all rabid empiricists who are on principle averse to the absolute truth, whose appearance is utterly incompatible with the domination of empiricism. But no adverse effects of the empiricists, whose rule seems till then to be perfectly well established over the minds of the deluded souls of the world, can dissuade any person from exclusively following the truth when he actually manifests his birth in the pure cognitive essence of the soul. Putana is the slayer of all infants. The baby, when he or she comes out of the mother's womb, falls at once into the hands of the pseudo-teachers of religion. These teachers are successful in forestalling the attempts of the good preceptor, whose help is never sought by the atheists of this world at the baptisms, of their babies. This is ensured by the arrangements of all established churches of the world. Who are the assistants of Putana? The established churches of the world. They have been successful only in supplying watchful Putanas for effecting the spiritual destruction of persons from the moment of their birth with the cooperation of their worldly parents. No human contrivance can prevent these Putanas from obtaining possession of the pulpits. The bogus spiritual leaders, you're not going to stop them. They're going to take over the religious organization. This is due to the general prevalence of atheistic disposition in the people of this world. The church
Listen to this. This is a real classic. Listen to this sentence. The church that has the best chance for survival in this damned world is that of atheism under the convenient guise of theism. So if we want ISKCON to survive, we should promote atheism in the guise of theism. Practically, that is the policy. ISKCON has to go on. Just see. The churches have always proved the staunchest upholders of the grossest form of worldliness from which even the worst of non-ecclesiastical criminals are found to recoil. It is not from any deliberate opposition to the ordained clergy that these observations are made. The original purpose of the established churches of the world may not always be objectionable, but no stable religious arrangement for instructing the masses has yet been successful. The Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in pursuance of the teachings of the scriptures, enjoins all absence of conventionalism for the teachers of the eternal religion. It does not follow that the mechanical adoption of the unconventional life by any person will make him a fit teacher of religion. Regulation is necessary for controlling the inherent worldliness of conditioned souls. But no mechanical regulation has any value, even for such a purpose. The bona fide teacher of religion is neither any product of, nor the favorer of, any mechanical system. In his hands, no system has likewise the chance of degenerating into a lifeless arrangement. The mere pursuit of fixed doctrines and fixed liturgies cannot hold a person to the true spirit of doctrine or liturgy. Then again, another zinger, next line coming up, or next paragraph. The idea of an organized church in an intelligible form indeed marks the close of the living spiritual movement. The great ecclesiastical establishments are the dikes and the dams to retain the current that cannot be held by any such contrivances. They indeed indicate a desire on the part of the masses to exploit a spiritual movement for their own purpose. They also unmistakably indicate the end of the absolute and unconventional guidance of the bona fide spiritual teacher. The people of this world understand preventive systems. They have no idea at all of the unprevented, positive, eternal life. Neither can there be any earthly contrivance for the permanent preservation of the life eternal on this mundane plane, on the popular scale. Those are therefore greatly mistaken who are disposed to look forward to the amelioration of the worldly state in any worldly sense from the worldly success of any really spiritual movement. It is these worldly expectants who become the patrons of the mischievous race of the pseudo-teachers of religion, the putanas, whose congenial function is to stifle the theistic disposition at the very moment of its suspected appearance. But the real theistic disposition can never be stifled by the efforts of these putanas. The putanas have power only over the atheist. It is a thankless but salutary task which they perform for the benefit of their unwilling victims. But as soon as theistic disposition proper makes its appearance in the pure cognitive essence of the awakened soul, the putanas are decisively silenced at the very earliest stage of their encounter with the newborn Krishna. The would-be slayer is herself slain. This is the reward of the negative services that the putanas unwittingly render to the cause of theism by strangling all hypocritical demonstrations against their own hypocrisy. But putana does not at all like to receive her reward in a form which involves the total destruction of her wrong personality. King Kamsa also does not like to lose the services of the most trusted of his agents. The effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first clear indication of the appearance of the Absolute on the mundane plane. The bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. So this is why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has come to this world and why we are praising him for having done so. He is the bona fide teacher of the Absolute who heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. There's so much more to say. There's more than 2,000 pages of saying it. Hare Krishna. 2,000 pages. Isn't it? I think it came to more than 2,000. No, not so many. 560, 800. No, not so many. Not even 1,500. Anyway, a lot of pages in this book. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Savaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.